Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is, 20, 30 degrees throughout Los Angeles. It's that part of the year where if you look out into the distance, those mountains are covered in snow. And that also means the flu season, and we've got a whopper this year. This is probably the worst one we've had in quite a long time. We have people dying throughout the United States, this winter flu. Only it's not just the geriatric crowd. It's just not the older people. It's not just the younger people. It's middle-aged people who are not immunocompromised and relatively healthy. So I think it's quite appropriate this time of year to understand the flu and how not to get it, because you're not going to get it. Talking to a guy the other day in Fairbanks, Alaska, it was 40 degrees below zero. So, of course, I had mentioned the cold spell here in Los Angeles. It made him laugh. It certainly did. But here's the point, so let's get down to it. Any shock to the body, if it drops from 70 degrees to 30 degrees, the body will be just as vulnerable as if you're in Fairbanks, Alaska, and it's 15 degrees, and then the next thing you know, it's 40 below zero. It's shock. The shock of winter. It's not that viruses like to hang out in cold weather. This is a myth. We're going to get into a lot of these myths about viruses and flus, but the first one is it's shock to the body. So I want to take a breather and take a look at this word shock. Shock is a word that indicates that the body cannot adapt rapidly enough to its environment. That's all shock is. The body can deal with anything. If it can deal with anything, if it can adapt in the light speed of second that it needs to, there's no such thing as shock. Shock, by definition, means that some change in the homeostasis, the equilibrium of the body, has been altered, and shock means the body can't adapt. In that gap between the stress coming in and the ability of the body to go back to homeostasis, you're vulnerable. That's what happens with these winter flus. It can happen in the summer too, but for other reasons, you're less vulnerable. But nonetheless, the winter flu is about a body that cannot adapt the drop in temperature. Second myth, the flu doesn't come to town. It's not like the flu isn't there already. Viruses are always there, but they're latent. People have this antiseptic, hygienic, ultra-conservative notion of the body along the lines of you took your herbal supplements, you ate correctly, you did all the things you needed to do, you got your vaccines if that's what you're into. Whatever it is, we've got this delusional notion that you don't have the virus in your body. Viruses are always there. The flu just doesn't come to town in the winter for Christmas. It's not that the flu likes cold weather, so it comes in when the temperature drops. Doesn't check into the hotel and hang out with room service and then just wait until it finds a vulnerable person and it just drops in on them. This is not the reality. The flu is a virus. What's a virus, by the way? A virus versus a bacteria. Don't want to take that distinction for granted. Viruses are probably the most lethal. Spanish flu, 1918 or so, millions of people, hundreds of millions all over Europe, probably the worst one in recorded history of the last 100 years at any rate. Smallpox. You know what the Chinese did with smallpox? This is an interesting little concept. The Chinese would take the scabs, the crusts on the skin of people, that had smallpox. They would dry the crusts in the sun, and they would snort the crust. The Chinese understood inoculation long before Robert Koch of England figured it out. Viruses have plagued us from the beginning of time. They are the most clever, the most insidious. And what are they exactly? Well, you can't understand the virus until you understand the DNA. You can't understand the flu until you understand the virus and the DNA. You'll see where this spins to. It's fascinating. Every cell is a grape. You've heard me make that analogy many times on this show. That nice green Thompson grape. It's got a skin, that's the cell membrane. The guts of it, the green gooey stuff, is the cytoplasm, or in the old days we called it the protoplasm of the cell. At the center of the grape are the seeds. At the center of the cell is the nucleus. Inside the nucleus are the reproductive parts of the cell where we have the DNA. Deoxyribonucleic acid, big word for two strands interfacing with each other in a helical structure. So it's a double helix. And if you separated those double helixes and pulled them straight, each helix is comprised of millions, gazillions of these things called nucleotides. There was a product at one time called nucleotide. There's a product now called nucleoimmune. Nucleotide refers to the purines and pyrimidines, cytosine, guanine, so forth, that comprise this strand of DNA. So if we go into that cell, pull out the nucleus, pull out the DNA, which is on the gene, and then pull that DNA straight, it breaks down to all these nucleotides. Now, what a virus does is it drills a hole through the membrane of the cell of the grape, and it makes a beeline for the nucleus. And it goes into that double helical structure, and it infects it, meaning it becomes part of it. If you can handle this, meaning it actually, in a sense, has sex with it. It becomes it. It has union with it. So this imposter within that strand of DNA is now there to replicate itself. As the DNA replicates, the virus piggybacks on the back of the cell metabolism. That's ingenious. It infects the cell, and then it lets the cell do the work to multiply itself. And it multiplies and multiplies. It interrupts cell replication, because it keeps multiplying inordinately until all these DNA strands, these single-stranded DNA viruses, are so numerous that they push out the cell and the cell bursts. So the cell dies because it's been invaded by the virus. And this is, of course, happening at whatever part of your body it's happening, and you feel miserable. Brilliant. Now, we've got equally brilliant ways within the body to counterbalance. But that's effectively what a virus is, and that's effectively how a virus gets in there, which allows you to understand why that product, nucleoimmune, works in that when the cells die and you feel the symptom, well, yes, you've got to kill the virus. Your body's immune system has to begin to build antibodies to the virus through the B lymphocytic system. But you have to understand the other part of repair from infection, and this is what a lot of people don't get. There's this constant emphasis on kill the virus, kill the parasite, kill the bacteria. It's a very Western microbial concept. Pasteur, isolate it, take it apart, and get rid of it. It leaves out the other half of cure. And you see this play itself out with nucleotides. You have to rebuild the cell. You have to rebuild the cell. To rebuild the cell, you need nutrition. You need your essential fatty acids. You need your amino acids. You don't need your carbohydrates. But the other thing you need are the nucleotides. Because the body has to rebuild the cell, and that includes rebuilding the DNA to the cell. So you have a rate-limiting issue when you're trying to recover from a virus. That rate-limiting issue is very much about the fact that the nucleotides that have been infected, ravaged, exploded, torn to pieces, have to reassemble. And that's why one of the things you have to pull off the shelf, you got to remember, nucleotide, the derivation of that in Switzerland was a prescription remedy for the flu. Nucleotide was sold in a different form, but similar concept in Switzerland under prescription to fight the flu. It was a medical prescription there and perhaps still is. Point being, this is an aspect of how you have to recover. And I think most of you understand this already, but perhaps not what's behind it. Now, secondarily, you have to go after the flu with an anti-infective. Nucleotide is not an anti-infective. Now, there's much ado about what anti-infective you're going to utilize. But what you want to do is make the distinction, and this is so important, the distinction between an anti-infective, that herb that will kill a virus, versus that herb that will stimulate the immune system. Those are two different things. Versus that therapy, which will make the terrain, the tissue itself, more conducive to receiving the herb or the medicine and draining the site. So we're breaking down your ability to defend itself against this year's flu into a bunch of parts. One part is to understand that you want to bring in the nucleotide. The second part is to understand that you want to bring in an anti-infective. The third part you want to understand is you have to bring in something to stimulate the immune system. What immune system? The thymus gland. That's about 3 inches below the notch of the throat. It's a little gland there. And that gland makes lots of immune system cells that go after viruses. That gland, if strong, will supply enough counterterrorism technique to the invading virus to vanquish it. That's your atom bomb. That's what's going to go in and disarm virus. And while it's disarming virus, through what? Through your antibody system. An antibody is a genetically engineered drug specific to the virus that attacks your body. We have a gland 3 inches below the throat whose sole purpose is to genetically engineer B lymphocytes, which genetically engineer the specific antidote to the specific virus. This is a process that one must participate in if you're going to heal any virus in the body. And that stimulation to the thymus gland is always an important part of what you add to an anti-infective, to what you add to the nucleotide issue. Collectively speaking, then, you're left with a tripod of an approach. And then you have to bring in a topical therapy. And then you have to understand the nature of invasion, and I'll explain that in a moment. What anti-infective you bring in is really about the anti-infective of choice. And there's different versions of that, from Podwarko to olive leaf to cat's claw. There's so many herbs from hyssop that go after anti-infectives. The anti-infective has to be specific to the brand of infection. So some anti-infectives will go after viruses. Hyssop goes after viruses. Podwarko goes after viruses. Cat claw goes after viruses. Olive leaf goes after viruses. Carvacol will go after a virus. So we bring the anti-infective in. We bring in the repair solution that has to do with nucleotide. We hope that we've got enough amino acid and fatty acid in the body And we'll get to that in a moment, and we'll get to why certain types of viruses will demand that you starve yourself. And then there's the topical concept. The topical concept is, what are you going to do to the tissue itself to enhance whatever solutions you're providing the body with? For instance, every time a virus attacks your throat or your gastrointestinal tract or your lung, those tissues have to drain the area. So if you've got an infection in the throat, if you've got a cough, if you've got intestinal infection, yes, you're going to have to repair it. Yes, you're going to need an anti-infective. Yes, you're going to need something to stimulate the immune system. But you also have to temper that area. And tempering that area brings us to a whole other conversation. We've had the smallpox virus, the Spanish flu. We have the solution of the vaccine. I don't want to get into the vaccine today. That's a separate show. It's cost-benefit. Someone that's not going to do anything and gets the flu because they didn't want to do anything holistic might be better served by a vaccine. Sometimes you just have to settle in a cost-benefit analysis. Don't be dogmatic is my point. You have to use your discretion about the vaccine. But by and large, I think most of you have decided that vaccines are not for you, and they certainly need not be. You've got immunologists, you've got virologists, you've got microbiologists, you've got epidemiologists, and all these different professions look at microbial infection, viral infection, and all of them understand the history of it in the last 1,000 years. And legendary are the plagues. The plagues that today we're still looking for. That avian bird flu we thought just might come in, flip a few genes, and become the plague. So there's a consciousness about this. You hear this every single year. And I bring this up because it begs a very, very important discussion. That's the discussion of, in every plague, whether it was smallpox or the Spanish flu, some people get it. And some people don't. And what you're going to be told consistently by your virologists, your microbiologists, your epidemiologists, is that some people get it because they don't have the genetic codes to counterbalance the invasion. They just can't, via the immune system, mount the response. They don't have the genes. And this has been offered up as the reason, the answer to the great parody of why did my brother get it and I live? And we've looked at this traditionally over the years. I mean, this is big stuff when you're really facing a plague. That Spanish flu took a quarter of Europe, almost a third of Europe. I remember stories in my family as a little boy, my grandparents barely escaping that in Europe. Many of you can relate. And the issue always was to me, and I offer it to you, why was only 2 out of 4? What did the other 2 do? And traditionally that answer has always been the genes. There is a profession, there is a budding science today that you must understand the implication of, because it really, really changes everything. And that is that the gene is controlled by an epigene. A satellite gene. In this field, we call epigenetics. It is hard science. It is the future of medicine to include the understanding that when you say to somebody, your gene doesn't code for it, or your gene has a weakness, that whether or not that gene makes you vulnerable depends on the satellite genes, switching the mother gene on or off. We have satellite genes, we'll call them epigenes. We have the mother gene. The mother gene drives the reaction, so to speak. It codes for what needs to be built so you can protect yourself. And the point is, unanimously. This is not arguable, is that the epigenes are controlled by the environment. The epigenes are controlled by the environment. That's your lifestyle. We are not to listen any longer to the notion that your breast cancer is genetic. And that this, that, and the other thing is genetic. The reason that you got smallpox, the reason you got the flu is because of genes. Your Lyme disease is because you're Janine. Genetic disposition, that you're genetically disposed to something, is the truth. But that your genetic disposition can be controlled by the epigene is the future of science. And you have to apply this to the flu. Each year, people die of the flu. And doctors say, well, it was a middle-aged man. He was relatively healthy. I guess it was just in his genes. No, it's not. So epigenetics is lifestyle. There it is in the guts of science. And on that basis, there's so much to do. But there's so much to understand. So understand this. One of the keys, I think probably the single most important thing you can do this winter, is listen to your body. You have to feel for the flu. I didn't say look for the flu. You can't look for the flu. You can't see the flu. You have to feel for the flu. Because the flu tells you it's there. Your body, if you really analyze this, no matter what flu you get, will tell you you're coming down with it before you get there. So you have to learn to feel for it. But that's just a statement that's part of a bigger whole, isn't it? All 85 of my shows are about teaching you to feel your body. Once again, it's no different. Whether you're going to feel a food in your body and feel that that food is right for you and listen to your body's response to confirm what you felt from the beginning is no different than sitting down in a chair one day, having a business luncheon, and feeling a cold wind in your back, and then getting into the car and feeling that cold feeling down in your kidney. And before you wake up with the flu the next day, you vanquish, you eliminate that cold feeling in your kidney. That scratchy throat on the plane, on the jet during travel season. That person that sat down next to you and coughed, and then 15, 20 minutes later in the cab, on the way home, after a long whatever, you feel that little scratch in your throat. Did you feel it? Or were you preoccupied? So much of beating the flu, really if you analyze it, is about that moment that you were too busy to take a time out to listen to your body. Analyze the flu. I have analyzed the flu. I have watched the flu in people for years. And I assure you that so much of beating the flu you don't want to get, has to do with catching it in that moment. And this is what you're training yourself to do. You're training yourself to listen. So let's understand how the flu gets into the body. Example one, you're sitting in a restaurant. You're fixing your car. You're moving furniture. And that cold wind, whether it's the air conditioning of a restaurant, whether it's the cold wind in the garage up your back while you're down fixing the car, whether you're out there gardening and it's just a little too cold, whether you're asleep at night, the cold that hits your kidney creates tension, tightness. There's lots of gap time between the moment you get that muscular tension in your kidney and the day you get the symptom. Yes, there is. If you analyze flus, there's gap time. There's so much gap time. That's one way it gets in, and we're going to talk about what to do with that. The other way it gets in is a systemic muscular tension. Now, I just said muscular tension. But that's muscular tension related to cold in the kidney. That is a certain type of flu. That is a certain entry level. And there is a certain specific thing to do about that. The other one is systemic muscular tension. You start to feel slightly run down throughout your whole body. Your legs feel heavier. Huge gap times between the moment that you come down with something like that and the moment you start to show a symptom. And there's a certain thing to do about that, and that's number two. Number three, this is different, isn't it? This is different because you're used to understanding the sign of the flu the moment you're sick. But there is a gap time, and if you listen with detail to what I'm saying, you'll catch it this winter. So number one, that systemic muscular tension makes you feel a little bit heavy in your body. That lurks there 1, 2, 3 days before you get the flu. That cold, we call it wind cold, up through the kidney, that makes the low back cold. There is a gap time there, and therefore something to do about that. Then there's the third way the flu will get in. The flu will get into the lung. The lung and the chest and the throat. When the large intestine begins to back up. That's the classic vacation flu or holiday flu. In the sense that over the holidays, people eat a lot of the sweet foods. They eat a lot of the carbs. They gain weight. It's party time. It's family time. It's celebration time. And we build mucus. That mucus, of course, is mostly in the intestines, the large intestine. And when we finally get plugged up to a certain point, the large intestine can no longer let go of its mucus. It crosses the critical threshold for the amount of mucus that it can hold. And what the large intestine does is it overflows it into the lungs. Those are paired organs. Many systems of medicine understand that chest cold you got with the large intestine. Many systems of medicine understand that cold you got, that cough you got in the lung, as it relates to your kidneys. Many systems of medicine, the moment you start to feel bloated, congested, and a little bit muscularly ached in the intestines, will bleed the colon. They'll give you enemas with certain types of oils to clean out the colon. And yet you have to know, and I'll get into this later, you have to know whether or not cleaning the colon, massive evacuation, colonics, enemas, so on and so forth, are going to be effective. Because if you back up, if you clean the colon, if you try to move out the liquid in the colon and you do it at the wrong time and you do it in the wrong type of congestion, you're going to make the flu worse. You can give yourself the flu that way. But just as a general guideline, understand this. There's a virus that'll get into your body systemically, and you know what that feels like when you just have a general muscular ache. There's gap time there, and you can beat that. I'll tell you how. Number two, cold wind into the kidney. There's gap time there, and I'll tell you what to do in a moment. Number three, usually when you eat too much, when you party too much, too many carbs, holiday time, you've gained weight, the intestines clog with grease, the grease overflows, grease slash mucus into the lung, and that makes you susceptible, number three. Number four, emotional stress. Now look at that. So now you're listening. So now you're understanding how it gets in. If you understand how it gets in and you're listening to your body, before it begins to mobilize, you'll nail it. That's the gap time we're talking about. Please understand, this is very different than what you do when you start to feel like you can't stand up anymore. This is the true preventative medicine for the flu. Once you get the flu, we can have discussions about what you do, but that's not what this show is about. What this show is about is the real gap time. And the reason that, I got to tell you, the reason that this is so important, the real gap time, is because once you get it, like once you feel like you can't get up, once you feel like really you're sick, I don't know anything that gets you out of that. And I've heard all sorts of solutions, all sorts of herbs, all sorts of this, that, and the other thing. And honestly, once you get it, generally just lay in bed and rest. So really, I think we've pointed to the wrong time zone, the wrong phase in terms of how we address the flu. And that's because you have to be listening to your body. We don't say this to people. We don't say that the cure for the flu is knowing what to do, but we don't say it's really listening to your body so you know when to pull the trigger. We give people these solutions sometimes, but what we don't emphasize and what's so critical is that you have to be listening to your body, meaning you have to feel the signs. When you sit in a chair in a restaurant and your low back is cold, nothing goes off in your head when you walk out of that restaurant to say, you know what? My back got cold. This is flu season. I've got to be careful. When you gain 5 or 6 pounds and you're feeling just fine, and you're a little sluggish in the bowel and you're feeling just fine, nothing goes off in your mind that says, you know what? I'm vulnerable now. This is my point. And if it did, just when the tension sets in, will you get it? That's what you call time to pull the trigger. So understand, this is not really what you've heard before. Catch the subtlety here. So you've got the wind cold, you've got the congested intestinal tract, you've got muscular tension all over your body, you've got your emotions. Those are four things you're looking for. You're also looking for that dry, scratchy throat. And boy, if there's a feel in the body that doesn't allow you gap time, one of the trickiest flus there is the one that comes in through the throat. The other three, the other four, you've got more gap time. You've got more time to react. This one is lethal. But this one, I don't know what it is, but I'd say half the time you get it in the throat, you can remember the person you spoke to that coughed around you, that exposed you, once you got that scratch. Half the time you can relate the scratchy throat to where you got it from. Uncanny association here. Nonetheless, whether you can relate it to the person you got it from or not, the dry, scratchy throat is the one that demands immediate response. And I think of everything I've ever seen, this is where you do two things. You bring in oregano oil to gargle with, and you bring in very large doses of nucleotide. If you really want to back that up, you take the castor oil, you soak the castor oil into the flannel, you put it on your chest, and hopefully you have now an infrared heating pad, a small localized infrared heating lab. Call the Premier Labs to see where that's available, if that's available. Get one of these things. I'm going to talk about them later. They're critical. And take the castor oil, soak the flannel, put three lathes of that flannel on the upper chest. This is for the sore throat. I didn't say for the cough. I said for the sore throat. And there's a reason. The cough is what you're not going to get if you listen to the other things I just mentioned. And I'll explain more specifically. But the sore throat is when you have to move very, very quickly. Three ways. The minute you feel dryness in the throat, the minute you feel the little tickle, this is when you have to bombard your body. 20 nucleotide immediately. And then three every hour for the day. You're going to go through an entire bottle. So always have Nucleoimmune on hand. This is where that herb really, really works. And then add to that gargling with the oregano oil. And then add to that the castor oil on the chest. But now you've got to add the infrared heating pad. But a small one. I didn't say an infrared sauna. If you go into an infrared sauna with a sore throat, you're going to spread it. You're going to make it worse. I'm going to talk about the infrared sauna in a moment and when you're supposed to use it. But I kid you not, if you have a sore throat and a tickle in the chest and you go into an infrared sauna, you're going to have a cold tomorrow. If you go into an infrared sauna when, in fact, you have a fever, you're going to have a bigger problem tomorrow. Once you get too weak with a fever, you do not use an infrared sauna. I'll show you in a moment. I'll tell you in a moment what an infrared sauna is absolutely indispensable for as it relates to the flu. So, gap time concept. Gap time is a concept. The amount of time between when you feel the flu, general tension in the body, cold wind in the kidney, bloating in the abdomen, heavy emotional pain that makes you just feel dead inside because you've got something you've got to handle that's just overpowering you. Four triggers, but you've got gap time. The scratchy throat, get moving on that. Get moving on it fast. That's the castor oil. That's the carvacol. And that's the infrared pad up on the throat and chest. Now, cold in the kidneys, what do you do? Cold wind in the kidney. If you can even, I have taken people with what we call a invasion of cold wind into the kidney and literally with the warmth of my hand rubbed the kidney within 10 or 15 minutes after the kidney got cold and taken the entire tension out of the system. That tension out of the system in that moment is where you don't get the flu. I've taken people who wake up in the morning with that heaviness in the body and tight ache in the kidney. And you can put them on a massage table and you can go in with your hands into the low back. And if you can stretch the back, press the back, lengthen the back, warm the back, you just beat the flu. But you're beating a flu that you don't even have yet. That's the point. To understand your body to the point where you feel on a cold winter day that your back froze up is to understand what I mean by gap time, that you have to intervene then to prevent something that's going to come a day or two later. In that gap is where you can activate. If you wait until the whole body goes down with it, which is where most people engage the problem, you're going to have a real issue. That's when you've got the flu where you lie down in bed for 3 or 4 days. Now, the muscular tension, systemic, this is where you use the infrared sauna. Anytime you get muscular tension in the body, systemic, again, you've got to feel it. But if you start to feel even the slightest increase in systemic tension to your body, the heaviness, low-grade heaviness, like somebody put a 5-pound weight on your body, this is when the infrared sauna is critical. This is when the musculoskeletal system is being invaded by the virus. This is when it's looking for a way in. And this is when, if you get into an infrared sauna at 140 to 150 to 160 degrees, and you sweat. Again now, you're not weak. You're not weak. If you're too weak, don't go into an infrared sauna. But if, one, you're relatively healthy, and two, you're suffering, you don't have a fever, just a generalized systemic tension. It's everywhere. It's your neck. It's your shoulders. It's your low back. It's your arms. It's your feet. You feel heavy when you stand up. This is when you get into a sauna. And don't do the pad then. See, this is the thing. Not an infrared pad, because the tension is systemic. This is when you have to go to the sauna. Now, you can do the hot bath routine for this. But really, these saunas are powerful. Because they're infrared heat, because they'll move the lymph. They'll move the lymph in a way, it's very difficult to get the lymph to move in the hot water. It's not quite the same. This is where the infrared sauna will stimulate the lymph, warm the entire body, and what you're going to do is drain the muscular system through the lymphatic system, through the sweat pores of your body, and reduce the titer of the virus. You'll take the virus from the gazillion number way down into what your immune system can handle. So let's break that down for a second. When a virus comes into the body, the initial inoculation of the virus into the body is not enough to take the virus, to take the body down. If the body doesn't respond because it's shocked and it can't adapt through the immune system rapidly enough because the immune system is too absolutely confused with other issues, if the body's too deficient to create the defense, then that virus has time to multiply. And what we're saying with the immune system and what we're saying with this type of flu is that when you get it in the muscular system, if you can get into an infrared sauna, again, you don't have a fever. Again, you didn't wait too long. But if you can get into an infrared sauna at 150 degrees in sets of 10, 15 minutes and then go into the ice cold shower, and back into the infrared sauna, and into the ice-cold shower, and back into the infrared sauna. If you can do an infrared hot-cold therapy to a systemic invasion of the flu virus, you will not get the flu. And you can have that muscular tension in your body with no flu-like symptoms for a day or two. And if you analyze people, they'll walk around, run down, and feeling these things, but they don't associate it with the flu. It's just like you don't associate tension in your low back with the flu. That's just tension in your low back. Oh, you got some wind on your low back, and your back is tight, so you're uncomfortable, and you're trying to find a better position to sleep in, and you're coming down with the flu, and you don't know it. The intestinal issue. This is critical. Before you get sick, if you feel bloated for a day or two, if you feel plugged up for a day or two, and you feel, and here's the key, muscular tension in your body. So you ate too much, you're a little constipated, you're kind of sluggish, you feel heavy, and you just have a little general muscular tension, you don't feel as good. This is when you have to blow it out with an enema. This is when you take the poop powders. This is when you get yourself to your colon hydrotherapist. This is when you do the coffee enemas. This is when you start to clean out your body. If you wait too long, and you do, and this is so important to understand, people do this all the time. They come down with a chest infection because they've pigged out over the holidays, and they go to the colon hydrotherapist. In that state, and here's the subtlety, but it's critical. In that state, once you've got the infection in the chest, if you try to clean the colon, you will push more of the garbage in the colon, metaphorically speaking, up into the lung, and you will get worse. You will get worse with a coffee enema. You're talking about a bloatedness, a congestion. That's pre-symptomology. You just feel it as heaviness and a little muscular tension. And if you can catch it then, and you can walk around like this a day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, you just don't feel yourself. You just feel a little heavy in the body. This is the time to blow it out. And the proof is in the pudding. If you can decongest the intestines to where your body frees up, to where you feel lighter and you reduce the muscular tension, you just beat the flu before you even got it. So that cold in the kidney, get rid of it. You just beat the flu before you got it. That congestion in the intestines, get rid of it. You just beat the flu before you got it. Emotions. Toughest one. Psychoneuroimmunology. For years we said emotions paralyze the immune system. For years we said that. For years that was controversy. About 15 years ago, somebody at UCLA, I believe, got a picture of a nerve strand on an immune system cell. And psychoneuroimmunology was born. Now this is hard science, that emotions can paralyze the immune system is science. Practically speaking, it means lots of people get the flu every year because something happens. Something bad happens. Something paralyzes the immune system. There's a solution for this. I kid you not, the solution works. If you can identify that within yourself, find the person, the place, the thing, whatever it is, that produces your endorphins. This is a really interesting statement I'm making. It's a really interesting statement. The counterdote, the antidote to a paralyzed immune system over emotional issues are the endorphins, the love chemicals. And if you can produce them in prayer, produce them. And if you can produce them in church, produce them. And if you can produce them with family, produce them. If you can produce them with that one friend of yours that's in another state, that one friend of yours that you don't normally see, produce them. If you can produce them by going to that one place, go there. Changes in geography, changes in your personal environment, meaning your people, produce endorphins. Whatever it takes, and we just did a show on the endorphins a few shows ago. Those endorphins are the antidote to what happens when the immune system is paralyzed by emotional stress and you're vulnerable to the flu. It amazes me. It amazes me how I do these shows and I really look and break down for you what health is about. And it is just so alien to how we understand it. Do you realize amidst these flus that we're all going to have this year and some people needlessly dying, if you took them all over the world this one year who are going to die of the flu, you would single out a sizable percentage whose immunity is paralyzed simply because of emotional duress. In short, they didn't get enough love. Now, we all agree to that. But biochemically speaking, it means no love, no good feelings, no euphoria, no endorphins. Endorphins make the immune system go round. And lack of those endorphins will take you down to the flu, to cancer, to heart disease, to you name it. So without getting complicated, keep it in mind. If you've been hit hard the last few weeks, few months from stress, emotionally based, not you took another job to pay the bills and you're tired all the time. No, something happened. Some series of things happened and you're feeling low. You can pump all the nucleotide you want. It's not going to do you much good. And you can change your diet and you can clean it up. And I think all of these things are great, but it's not the point. The point is you have to isolate the entry point to the virus. The show has brought you to an understanding of gap time. It's brought you to an understanding of the trigger, when to pull the trigger. It's brought you to an understanding of listening to your body, feeling your body for when it goes down and makes you vulnerable. Subtle, but true. Emotions, endorphins. Muscular systemic tension. Get into the infrared sauna. When those kidneys go cold, make sure you apply therapy to the kidney. When you get congested in the intestines, expunge. And do it with all the subtleties. Don't do one when you're supposed to be doing the other, because it'll backfire and your flu will get worse. It'll come faster. Okay. Wonderful. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. My schools are running. We're going into our third one. I want you to call Annika at 310-508-8611, 310-508-8611. I want you to call in the event that, well, go to the website straighttalk.cc. You can sign up for the school on straighttalk.cc. I think perhaps that's the better way to do it. Also, get to the website for the archives to the show. In the future, we're going to be adding videos. I know I've said this. I'm going to be doing it over the next month or two. I'm going to be doing it, and we're going to add the archives to the subscription service. The subscription service is for the archives, for the videos, and we'll be coming out with a library. Muscular tension. Muscular tension is the single most important indice of what's going on in the immune system. It's a connection between the two that's not made often. How do you know when a virus has come into the body and it's about to activate? It's about the entry level locale to the infection. An entry level is almost always the muscular system. There's few exceptions to that. The throat is one of them. But the muscular system, really, by and large, is how the flu gets in. So you have to understand the muscular system on a new level. Muscular tension is a message. And if you listen to this dynamically, because muscular tension is always reflexing to the organ systems. The organ systems are always reflexing to the muscles. And this reciprocity between the two is a dynamic, ongoing, constant dialogue. Now, that's your cue. If you miss that cue, whether it's in the kidney, whether it's generalized, whether it's congestion down in the intestines making you feel heavy in your neck, in your shoulders, and you jump to a fever, now you go to the fever. You can't go into the sauna. If you've got the fever, you've got to go into the blankets. The sauna is too intense. The sauna will move the lymph. This is so important to understand. When your body gets sick to the point where it drops into a fever, if you move the lymph, you will spread the infection. The only thing you want to stimulate are the pores of the skin once you have a fever. Because the infection, the virus, is deciding whether or not it wants to stay in the muscle and drop in, or stay in the muscle and drop out. The body's doing its job by, of course, increasing the internal temperature to vanquish the virus. So the body's doing what it's supposed to do. But whether the virus goes deeper or goes out is up to get in the blankets, wrap them, and sweat all night. Sweat and hydrate. Sweat and hydrate. If you go into an infrared sauna, once you have a fever, you're going to spread the fever. If you go into the infrared sauna before you have the fever, you'll get it out of your body. Important subtlety there. Understand how to deal with the fever. The fever from the flu is your body's natural mechanism. Don't lower your fever unless your fever starts to climb past 103. It's a different story. If you have children, of course, that's a different story. The fact is, use the fever to beat the flu, but you have to use the fever intelligently. You've got to understand what the fever is telling your body. It's telling your body that it's trying to keep it out of your organ systems. It's trying to keep it out of your lungs. Did you ever have muscular pain? It becomes a fever. The fever starts to go away, and boom, you've got pneumonia. Boom, you've got some sort of bad chest cold. Think about that. Muscular tension, fever, chest cold. The fever is the moment that you have to drive the virus out of the body and not more deeply into the body. And again, the sauna will drive it more deeply at that time. But wrapping yourself in linen and blankets, lots of them, and making sure you sweat profusely while hydrating yourself all night is using the fever to your advantage. So the body is this incredible myriad of messages. And if you read the messages and understand the nature of the virus, the flu is gone before you ever really and truly get the flu. But again, you've got to be able to listen to your body. Now, all 85 of my shows, all the shows teaching you health, are your foundation. What people do is they rob themselves of their foundational health, and then they get to the point where they have so little foundation that none of these things are going to work. So some people get hit with the flu and they're going to go down. And in the cost-benefit of things, you have to understand that sometimes you're going to go down for 2 or 3 weeks. It's a message. When it's like that, if you really understand how to surf those waves, so to speak, if you really understand how to push your body, but at least you get your sleep, you eat relatively well. You do kind of what you're supposed to do, and then you abuse yourself for whatever reasons. Things happen emotionally. You eat too much on the holidays. You take another job, so you work an extra 20 hours a week. And you're listening to your body, you'll beat the flu. But there's another type of a profile where somebody has consistently run themselves down psychologically, biochemically, structurally, and so on and so forth. And if that person gets hit, they're going to go down 2 or 3 weeks. That's when your body tells you what to do, which is not to stand up. Of course, this is not where you want to go. Who are you and what are you going to do when you get like that? That's my 85 shows. That's when you have to understand your issue from the systemic standpoint and not from the topical one. So whether you're going to get down this year, unfortunately, you know what to do. Get healthy. And if you're doing what you're supposed to do and it's just been a little much, listen to your body. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. We'll see you next week. Ciao.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.